That's better, that's right. That's kind of out of the shot.
That's out of my shot.
Yeah. Okay. My glasses are
Do
there.
Do we want the one camera or the one candle? Or should we get rid of it?
I like the one candle.
Yeah.
The five was too many.
Excessive. I guess. Yeah.
It's like we're staging like a Halloween party.
Exactly. We should have the marigolds here.
Oh, yeah,
we could do a themed.
A little shrine.
Like the candy fangs.
Exactly.
Yes. Buy our glasses.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready. Okay, ready when you are.
Okay. So, first we'll just have you say your names, and then where we are.
Hi, I'm Robin Verson, and we are at Hill and Hollow Farm in Metcalf County, Kentucky.
I'm Madeline Bella, and I'm in the exact same place.
We'll try not to be silly.
I'm gonna try not to laugh too.
I know.
Okay, don't be funny.
It's hard not to. It is hard, you know. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, so maybe the first thing we can do is just like kind of an overview of your background and how you decided to move to Kentucky and how it, like a general story of like how it came about that you ended up in this spot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was in my 20s when I was first introduced to organic farming, and that came by way of a commitment to an organic diet because my mom was diagnosed with an esophageal cancer, and it was in her digestive tract, and it became super important to eat organic food. I was in my 20s, and so my sister and I joined as a working share for a CSA farm outside of Chicago called Angelic Organics. And so Farmer John Peterson was my mentor, and I went there not expecting to want to be a farmer. I just wanted, as a 20-something, I wanted a way to have organic broccoli for my mom, who was dealing with cancer, and our household. So I arrived there, and the first thing that you do, as any farmer does when a young 20-something comes, he had me hoe a full acre winter squash patch which it's amazing I'm still here now. But I was so empowered and moved from the experience of being on that farm that at that moment I knew I wanted to be a farmer. And that is also the beginning of this journey. As first generation farmers, we couldn't afford, even this is 1998, we couldn't afford land in and around Chicago, obviously. And so we started looking in this agricultural zone, which is six, county by county. And we just landed in Kentucky because it was affordable and it was the right length of growing season for us. And we bought this land and moved here in 1999 and have been certified organic and have run a CSA since the very first year.
So do you remember coming to this land for the first time?
I do. We went to the old place and we drove along that creek, which we'll do. It was interesting because we had gone to different farms. We were actually living at Jeff Poppin's farm in Macon County, Tennessee. And we were just going county by county every weekend looking for places. And we showed up in Metcalf County and went to the realtor. And he actually owned this place. So we had seen all these other farms and it was like nothing was good. And then he drove along that creek and we were like, this is for sale? Are you sure? And we just bought it like the next day. It was like perfect. Yeah.
And so you, Sasha wasn't born yet?
No, he was not. He was born the next year.
So did you have your children on the farm?
Yes, all but William. Yeah. Sasha was born at home at the old place. We can do the historical tour later before dinner. And Madeline was also born at home with the midwife here. Mm-hmm. And then William was born in a hospital because of complications. Yeah.
So when you first started farming, did you have a tractor? Did you have like the equipment?
No, No, it was all done by hand. We called it human-powered gardening at that time. And we got those, like, it seemed really expensive at the time. It's so funny when I think about it now. Those, like, $85 digging spades. Now it's like, oh, my gosh. So we did it all by hand until I was pregnant with Madeline, which was 4 years later. And then it was like, okay, maybe we need a tool, like a mechanism. So we did get a tractor 4 years in. And then that was also like a growth period, kind of, because CSA was very new to the area. We serve Nashville, which you know probably, it was really a new concept. There weren't any CSAs when we started in Nashville. There's a lot now, obviously, and so the trajectory of our farm was also kind of resembled a growth in Nashville in terms of awareness of organic food and CSA like that. So by the time 4 years in, we were both pregnant with our second child and the CSA had grown. So it was like, okay, the spade is not going to do it anymore.
So what spiritual background were you raised in?
I was raised Jewish, actually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So did that impact, like, I guess I don't really know much about the Judaism and, like, relationship to the soil and other practices that are connected?
Yeah, I don't think that I was raised that way, and I soon, like, probably in my late teens or early 20s, I sort of moved away from, like, all kind of organized religion. I traveled a lot in Asia in my 20s, and I had a lot of exposure to a lot of world religions, and I saw the similarities, and then I saw the oppression of identifying as one thing. So no, I don't think that had a direct relation. I think the most kind of spiritual connection came through biodynamics, which I was introduced at. The first farm I went to was Biodynamics CSA.
The Angelic Organic?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've seen that movie.
The Farmer John, the Feel Good CSA movie. No, because I'll tell this.
It's a good story.
It's a good story. His girlfriend at the time that I was there, like, wouldn't sign the rights. She was a bitter ex. My moment of fame. So frustrating. So all the way up to it and all the way, you can just, it's just that year. I'm mad at her still. But no, we were not.
You're like, so if you're watching this, I'm still mad.
Yeah, just FYI.
Still mad about the rights.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that Angelic Organics is one of the biggest biodynamic and maybe the first, like...
Yeah, I was working there in 1994, and, you know, I mean, Elizabeth Henderson, the very, very, very first CSA was, like, in the late 80s in New England, and so when you talk about having a CSA in 94, at that point it was already 300 members. I mean, that is just, like, huge. I mean, it's definitely one of the early players in the CSA movement, and probably still one of the biggest biodynamic farms. I don't know that.
Seems likely.
Yeah.
So when you arrived on the farm, there was the cabin. You were living in the, like, that, or you made that cabin?
The one, which one?
Like, where the outdoor kitchen was?
Oh, no, we built that. There was nothing. Okay. There was that little, we'll look at it when we go back, the little, we call it the shack, was there. And, I mean, at this point now, the floor is falling in, and it's totally crazy. But we moved here. By then, I was pregnant with Sasha, and we didn't have any money because we had sunk all of our money into the land, obviously. And so we were living in Chicago and coming back and forth. And we were trying to build a little cabin out of, like, recycled materials. So we were, like, Paul was working construction in Chicago, and, like, we were, like, coming down with 2x4s, and it was just all this crazy. And kind of living in our truck at the time. And the shack was always there, and it was just this dilapidated old, like, the original house on that property burned in a fire long ago. So there wasn't, like, even an old farmhouse, really. And so the structure that was there, aside from the barn, was this in-laws shack type of structure, I guess. And finally, I don't know, I was probably 7 or 8 months pregnant, and it was like, okay, we need to do something about the shack. And so we kind of fixed up the shack and lived in there for 4 years. And then we built, where you're going to stay tonight is what we built, and that's where Madeline was born, and that's where was a huge, felt like a huge upgrade.
So what are your first memories of being on the land or like helping in the gardens?
Playing in the creek is an early, early memory. Being out in the fields, digging out big pits in the dirt and then laying in it because it was cool. Did a lot of that. Animals. I don't know if I could pin down a specific earliest memory. It's just sort of been always on here. But I don't know if I have an earliest memory. A lot of creek, a lot of dirt, planting things, doing all the stuff that I still do now. But I can't get out of it anymore.
By digging a hole.
A voracious reader.
Yes, yes. I learned to read pretty young, and that was my main form of entertainment for a very long time. Read a lot of fantasy. Now I work at a library, so it sort of circled back around. Still a reader. Mm-hmm. Still doing that.
You know, I side note, sorry. I always think about like those. Did you read the Madeline Lingle books?
Yes.
And, like the Black Rat Snake, and then the one of them. I can't remember her name. And then the rock in the woods where she would. It's not in A Wrinkle in Time. It's like in the
one of the other ones.
Yeah.
I don't quite remember that. The other books,
the
other than A Wrinkle in Time.
The
Wind in the Door.
I did read all those, but it's been a while. I don't remember the snake.
Did you read the Terry Pratchett books?
No, I never got into those. I know a lot of people who were, but never.
That's
never
not
my
part
thing.
Of the interview, sorry. No.
Just curious.
Side note. Okay, so I'm interested in how biodynamics, how you initially practiced biodynamics when you, in the early years, and how it's your relationship to it has changed, like, up to the present day. You know, it's a big question, but...
Yeah. I think that in the early years, and it was a little bit what we were talking about before, I felt very committed to like every aspect of the practice of biodynamics. So it wasn't just applying the preparations. It was like making the preparations. It was like harvesting the dandelions and harvesting the camp. It was like just a very... I don't want to say a stronger commitment, but more of like a fuller exploration of just like, okay, we're going to slaughter the cow and we're going to know where that mesentery comes from. And do you know all of the aspects of it, which is sort of mystical and kind of incomprehensible sometimes, oftentimes still. And I think in those early years of practicing biodynamics, I thought like maybe I would, you know, you're like reading the agriculture course and making the preparations and applying them. And then at some point you kind of think that maybe you would like understand. And then now I've just given up on thinking that I'll understand and I can apply the preparations and practice kind of a spiritual type of farming and just have belief that it's making this farm a better place. And I might not understand exactly why or how that's happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I always think of it as like the main, I guess, my takeaway from all the Steiner lectures I've read over the years is like that, you know, it's like that there's like a spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Exist in a spiritual world in which like everything has like a spiritual component, and that there's like this materialistic like impulse of like humanity that's like that we're like being, you know, that's sort of like crystallizing and like it's like or like into like this like thought that like this is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's
mm-hmm.
just the table. There's not like the spiritual force that like, you know, existed prior to the table or like after.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like, so like farming is biodynamics. It's like, it's. I think it's a much different way of viewing the earth.
Yeah. So it's like it makes me think of this example of a conversation I had with someone in preparation for doing a presentation, which I don't really want to do because I don't love it, but I'm gonna do it because it's a friend who asked, and this friend was like asking me to, you know, sort of present data. And I'm like, I don't really collect data on my farm. I mean, I have soil tests and I like look at them and stuff, but biodynamics has led me to just a more intuitive and spiritual approach to the soil, which is leading to this no-till thing, and the plastic and the mulch and everything like that. And it's not data, which doesn't go very well in the conference circuit because it's not really data-based. It's just like, can't you tell this feels better this way is how I view it and how I think about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you're sort of feeding the soil and applying compost and doing these sprays. And I would get in these conversations with Laura all the time about, like, when you're stirring for the hour and explaining to apprentices about stirring and believing that the intention of that hour is actually more important than the physical substance of the field preparation that you're putting on there. That energy, that human energy that you're putting, like the meditation of just doing this thing for an hour where you're like, you want to be done before the hour is over. Most people. Myself included. And that intention and that meditation and then like going through that process, that's what's going into the soil and the plants and the farm organism, rather than this, yeah, like, mine, it's the homeopathic view.
What's interesting, because like I wrote this grant for KFW, and in it I talked about like one of the motivating one thing that motivated me to do this project is like being at the biodynamic conference in Louisville, and I forget who it was, maybe like it was like some Wes Jackson or something like that spoke, and then Laura spoke after them.
Oh gosh.
And when she got to the stage, she was so self-deprecating, and she's like, "Oh, like I'm God, I don't want to follow that, like, because it's like, you know, like the like kind of like math, like masculine, like data presentation, and like this." And Laura was like, "I'm just gonna tell you a story about my cow."
Exactly.
Like, her story, like, enliven the room. And
yeah.
It's like, every, you know, brings that connection that is like the actual inspiration that we need for people to be like, "Oh, I want to do that."
Exactly.
Do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the numbers don't do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can speak a little to that, because I think it's like, that's really important to me too. It's like that kind of like, I'm intuitively connected, I have a feeling connection to this work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I have a relationship with the with the farm. And like I learn from this, and I'm responsive, or it's like reciprocity. Like, it gives to me, I give to it.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I was crying the whole time, by the way. Yeah. Yeah, and it was Jean-Paul like, Cortens is who it was,
What year was this conference?
This was
a while ago.
You were little. It was the one when you guys were stuck in that room.
Oh, when we weren't allowed to get anything.
Yeah, okay. It was really, that conference has, anyway, we won't talk about that conference, but I remember that exact moment. That's so interesting. But now I forgot your question.
If you could talk about, like, maybe the difference between, like,
femininity.
Oh, well, I think it's so interesting because,
Hold on one second. Is my phone shut off? Okay.
Is it dead?
No.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to speak to that because I don't know. I'm not a male farmer. You know what I mean? So it's like I can only sort of compare myself to myself and then things that I've read or observed in conferences or in, you know, peer-to-peer engagements. But yeah, it does seem like there's something more common amongst women farmers who are just willing to trust their instinct. We're trained to do that as mothers, you know, just to kind of like believe that this drive that we feel for our children is accurate and we're doing the best we can for our children. And you can apply that same feeling kind of to the soil and to the plants. And even if you don't, even if you're a woman without children, oh my gosh, it feels like you can't talk about gender anymore in the world. Sorry. It's so scary.
It's okay.
Yeah, you're
I'm sorry.
You're
I'm stuck.
Don't worry about
It's like, you started this with calling it powwow, and I'm like, I just can't even say these words.
Maybe just don't say gender. Maybe avoid
femininity. No, I wasn't going to say gender, but it's just, I was going to say these things, and you're just like, there's just sort of like someone in the background going,
yeah.
That's binary of you, Robin. Like, yeah. Fuck.
That's funny, because I was like, Susanna, how do you, like, because I was just like, I mean, I don't want, you can't assume anything, so I'm like, do you identify as a woman? And she, like, launched into this whole thing about that she's not gay, even though people think she is, and I was like, that's not what I was at.
yeah, it's just so interesting, and it's, I mean, I consider myself a really open person, and I try, but it's like, it's a different, that wasn't what was going on, like, in my, I'm 55 years old, you know what I mean? And it's
the same for me.
It's hard. I'm like, I totally respect all those choices, but that pronoun is it's a plural.
I mean, I think just like, if we're speaking from your own identity and however you identify yourself and how that like influences your relationship to your farm.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just a big sidetrack.
Tangent. Sorry, you can jump in too.
Yeah, go.
If you want to talk about
your turn, Madeline.
Talk? I guess with the feminine impulse, if that's what we're going to call it now, the politically correct terminology for today. Trusting instincts is more allowed, I guess, or encouraged. And then I think there is more an air of caretaking. Both being expected to be a caretaker, but then more of an instinct for it, or a desire to be a caretaker.
Stewardship. It's just like
stewardship.
It's out there, and it's trying to get you have a feel for what the soil needs, or what the plants need, or what the livestock needs. And I think as a woman, I'm just more comfortable doing it. Plus, like women, I mean, we're minority, right? Women farmers are minority, so you're already just like, okay, you all just whatever. I think I'm weird anyway. Might as well just like. Do what I want to do. You know what I mean? It's like less to, I don't know. Less to prove and more to prove at the same time.
So do you have regrets about this life that you've chosen?
Oh my gosh, no. Not a single one. This place is perfect. My kids are perfect. If I had any regrets, guess what? COVID showed I'm perfect.
We have it all.
We have everything.
We have it all.
We have everything. Do you know what I mean? Can you imagine a more affirming thing than COVID for our lifestyle? Not really.
Zombie attack?
Yeah.
Bring out the answers.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm at a good place because my kids are grown and they're amazing and intelligent and functioning and perfect, and the farm is a success, and so it's easy to say that, but it was very, I mean, obviously it's been a very difficult time for everyone, COVID, a global pandemic, but I was like, I'm fine, you know, I have my food. I have all that I need. I have this land. I mean, I felt very, very lucky and very affirmed recently with every lifestyle choice that I've made. So no regrets.
Definitely. It was very affirming. Like, we'll be okay.
No matter what.
If we can't find food, we can grow food. We do grow food. We'll be.
Yeah.
We'll be okay because of what you've done to us. We'll be fine.
And having capable children, like, that's a really amazing thing. You know, when people are like, okay, what are you doing with your kids? Like, you don't have them in school. Like, they're just playing, digging holes. laying in the creek. They're all, you know. That's like, I think, as a parent, aside from being a farmer, but as a mother, you know, like, there's, you know, years and years and years of doubt. You're in it, probably. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, like you're a legal adult.
I can do things.
You can do everything.
I can do it all.
You know? It's like you're sort of waiting for this moment, and then it's arrived for me, I guess, so.
We're assets now. Help you, help the farm.
We're paying off here.
Exactly.
Finally.
The investment is working out.
Not that way, but just like knowing that they can. I never cared about anything other than that they would be, they could, my children could function in the world. My whole goal. You know what I mean? And be able to do what they want to do, and they can.
And to have a sense of what it is they want to do, because so many people are just so lost in that way.
I mean, I definitely believe that community farms, so, I mean, the CSA model is just one aspect, but, like, a farm that nourishes a larger community, and that community knowing their farmer is pivotal. For the future of, you know, thriving rural communities, like healthy people, you know, food has to be grown in the soil by someone that's devoted to the land. And the people that are eating that food need to have an attachment to that person that's growing their food. And communities need to know where their food is coming and so that coming from. And so it's like nourishing, like the body, the spirit, the mind, all of the things. And so this model that I have been involved in for however long, 23 years, is a model that needs to continue and needs to nourish communities. And in that, so it's also low impact. It's like, I mean, climate change is just the hugest thing ever, and it's, you know, I draw my clothes on a line because I think that's going to, like, make a difference. But I did read an article once that said the number one thing you can do is stop using a dryer. That's what you can do in your household. My kids hate this so much. They're like, every day, they're like, well, not every day. Sasha wants a dryer.
Sasha
really
wants
bad.
But
he still
like
has a guy. Still, but so anyway, we do all these little things because we're like concerned about the environment. And so now in farming, there's this whole thing right now. It's the carbon farming and the regenerative farming, and then tillage is bad. And it just, like, it's really confusing to actually know what you can do. But I feel really good about basically a low till, minimal impact, heavy mulch, heavy compost, certified organic method of food production that I'm doing here. And I think it can be replicated and modeled and healthy for families. And then you talk about, like, the cultural aspect too of just, like, you know, I think people talk about there being, like, a north-south conflict, like the just political conflict. I'm not going to get into politics or gender, but the true conflict is, I believe, between rural and urban communities. I think there's a real lack of understanding between those two worlds that leads to sort of societal discontent or something like that. I don't know. And so connecting, you know, having thriving rural communities, because all these farms are awesome and everyone in the world is eating kale and they're better. And then urban people being attached to that. I mean, Seth said, one of my shareholders said yesterday, he's like, he believes that like youth need, that people need to touch dirt. That's it. He's like, it's not even, it doesn't even matter. He's like, the flaw is simply they have to have their hands in the dirt. And I was like, I kind of get that. That's, you know, I mean, I always think they should be growing something out of that dirt, but just like this access to the earth. So that aspect of the community farms is also really important. I think that like reconnecting urban people to rural people can like maybe dissipate some of this tension that we feel societally right now, number one. And then number two, a thriving rural culture, you know, through healthy small farms is going to help a lot of the tension also. It's my concept.
More dances.
And that too.
Barn
exactly.
dance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bring right. back the barn dance.
Madeline, same question.
I mean, you've covered a lot of it. From a climate aspect, I think the future can be grim if you look at it, but things that we're doing here, small scale farming and regenerative ag, like you were talking about, it works and it can be replicated very much, and that can bring a lot of, it could help a lot with the current problematic climate situation, which I would like to see. I've got a lot of years and I would like the climate to be better. That would be great. If I can help that by working on an organic farm and having an organic farm and using a clothesline, then that's what I'll do. I like Earth a lot. I would like it to be good.
Yeah, as an 18-year-old who's just coming of age in a strange time, how do you maintain hope?
Working in the dirt. Growing things. That's a lot of it. The physical, laborious aspect of farming is very grounding. And then emotionally, it's so good to grow things. It's so good to see things grow that you've done, and they work. And then you can eat them, and they're tasty. I think that is probably the largest part of what I do to remain hopeful. And then not listening to the news when I feel I'm getting a little too down in the dumps about it. Just like, stop. Stop reading the articles about how few years are left.
What's your relationship to biodynamics, or what do you think about it?
Well, I find it, I've never studied it in any deep regard myself, and essentially it's all been very confusing, and I hear adults talking about it, and I don't really get it. But I've done it, I've done all the prep work, I've done the stirring, I've done the applications, and I see that things do better with it. When you work with it, things are better. But I haven't done any sort of in-depth study myself to try and understand it or anything like that. But
her introduction is Laura and Philip talking to each other about it. That's
exactly.
Pretty off-putting.
Exactly. Or being handed a book of Steiner's lectures and being like, here, do you want to read it? So... It's all a little esoteric, but I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, last thoughts? You want a big message for the world? I don't know
eat
who,
kale?
How many people are going to eat kale.
Eat more vegetables. Support local farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here, I'm going to eat. Okay, last message, and I'm not going to laugh or talk through it.
Eat more kale and support local farmers. What do you got? Top that.
Yeah, there's not much more to say. Everyone should buy everything locally. That's what I think. And all, I mean, are the only way, or not the only way, we need to have healthy local economies for people to feel secure and happy And the farm economy is this thing that we've talked about here because that's what we're doing. But that could, you know, small businesses, right? Any connection to any local economy and local business is mandatory, I think. You want to hear my birth story?
Which one?
Like having a family, having your family here on the farm, working with you, and comparing that to, I guess, other people you know, other farmers who don't have that.
Yeah.
I guess that's my question.
To say more explicitly what that has meant for you.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, it's really interesting because I've never this, like, lonely thing. Like, I haven't been alone in a long, 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 long time for more than, you know, an hour or something.
Maybe a day.
Like a very limited amount of time. And so I just, it's always just a funny thing. But I feel that, so it was not always easy. Obviously, you have young children right now, and you know, when you're trying to get something done, this is like the maternal struggle everywhere. You're trying to get something done, and your child needs your attention, and it's like this conflict. It's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. And so I had some tools that I used, like backpacks and slings and everything, to kind of keep my children with me and still feel productive and getting things done that I had to get done. But ultimately now, looking back on it and reflecting on it, is like the connection that I have with my children, because they've been with me constantly through this whole thing, is just, I don't see how people can live without that connection. Like, it's so awesome. Like, they're definitely just my absolute favorite people, number one. And also they help me do everything, you know, they help me do everything. And we have this relationship where I think you also ask, you can ask of me what you want and I can ask of them what I want. It's just so cohesive and amazing. And that comes from that day in, day out. We're doing this thing together, and you're doing it because this is paying the bills, you know what I mean? So it's always like, why are you doing it? You're not getting an allowance. You're not getting, like, paid to do this. You're doing this because you live here and you eat here and, you know. And so we've always just been together and worked together. And I don't know, coming out the other end, it's like I wouldn't do it any. But, yeah, it's incredibly difficult when they're young and they're in diapers and they're breastfeeding. And it's like, you know, it kind of feels a little challenging. But now I'm like on easy street. You know what I mean? Because now they do it all for me, make my outfits. You know what I mean? I'm just like, what struggle? Yeah.
Madeline, would you like to speak a bit more about what it was like growing up with your siblings here and spending so much time with your parents? And a perfect dream?
It was pretty great in general. And because of the forced proximity of it all, we essentially got along,
mm-hmm.
for mm-hmm. the most part, which has been great. I talked to a lot of people who, like, don't get along with their parents and their siblings. I'm like, that's weird. It's weird. I wouldn't want to not get along with Mom. Working together for years and years and years is a great bonding experience. But now it's very much a give and a take. Of, yeah. I help mom with all of her stuff, and she helps me with my stuff, and it's very cohesive. It flows very nicely. It never really feels super forced or like you have to do something necessarily. Now, it's different when we're younger, but
yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of mutual respect.
Definitely. Definitely.
I love it. I always think of this as a model, and so it's always really perplexing to me when people don't do it like this, like their family farms, but like the kids, they put the young children in daycare, or like, I'm like, you might as well just be working for, it's so corporate America of you, you know, but I'm like, there's so many other people that are doing that. They're not like, they're committed to farming, but not this family farming thing, you know, it's, and I'm sure you know, it's like, wow, that's, who does that? But that's, I mean, I think that for a certain amount of time, there was definitely like, that's another thing, the data and the efficiency. The efficiency. Like, I had a lot of inefficiency, but, and no data. That's my model. But then at the end of it, it's like, it's perfect. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of give up some of that, like, perfection on that one level.
We have an audience now. Yeah.
Do you want to say something about farming?
No.
Anyway. Yeah. I wouldn't have it any other way.
The ducks agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Just loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
I know, right? There'll be some editing.
there'll be
like 1 minute.
I
know.
It's going to be...
At the end
what is that? What is that? There's got to be some like...
No, there'll be more than a minute.
To have like...
Some piece of data that...
Is there some number that you have to have X minutes of... footage to have
raw
X
footage.
Raw footage to have, so like 30 minutes
there
you get
a,
like
there's an ideal ratio. It's like you're gonna edit I think you're gonna spend about an hour editing for every minute you shoot,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so but there's also I think in order for
he's like I don't really want to tell you that.
There's also I think like in order to make like depending on whatever it is you have to like if you want to make a minute long video you have to like basically times it by
okay.
Like
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But
a lot.
A lot. Yeah, because
there's numbers involved.
Yeah.
There's numbers somewhere.
Okay. So what? What's next? Do tell.
I'm gonna walk.